Chicago public school kids not in class. The strike continues. You've been hearing about that. Each day we wonder if this is the day something finally breaks. Today is not that day. We invited some teachers to come into our studio, Chicago public school teachers, members of the Chicago Teachers Union, and in our studio now are five of them. So let's just find out a little bit about what their day is like and what it's like in the classroom. In our studio, Jane Haddad. Jane, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having us.
What grade do you teach? Where do you teach?
I teach 7th grade English Language Arts at Saucedo Scholastic Academy in Little Village.
Dave Stieber is here. Hi, Dave. How are you?
Good. How are you doing today?
What's your story?
I teach 9th grade Human Geography at Kenwood and 12th grade Poetry, and I'm also the parent of two CPS students.
Stephanie Bernardo is here. Hi, Stephanie. How are you?
I'm great.
You're also at Kenwood, is that right?
Yes, and I teach 7th grade through 10th grade math.
How long have the two of you been at Kenwood?
This is actually my first year there, but 6 years in CPS.
Got it. And how about you?
Second year at Kenwood, 13th year in CPS.
And what about you, Jane?
This is my second year at Saucedo and 6th year in CPS. And I also have a student in CPS schools.
Saucedo is in Little Village, and Beth Fiorito also teaches there. Is that right, Beth?
Yeah, that's correct.
What's your story? What do you teach?
So I teach 5th grade English Language Arts and Social Studies.
How long have you been at CPS?
So I've taught in CPS neighborhood schools and charter schools for 7 years. This is my second year at Saucedo.
And then next to you is the guy in charge of the band, Carlos Ayeto?
Ayenso, yes.
Ayento. Carlos, what's your story?
My name is Carlos Ayenso. I teach K through 8 music at Saucedo as well as the band program after school. I'm going into my 18th year at Saucedo, all 18 years at CPS.
So we have great school through high school. We've got language arts, we've got science and math, we've got band. I think we have a nice sort of collection here of the CPS experience. What I'm hearing is that classroom size and support in the classroom is maybe the biggest stumbling block. Is that a big stumbling block for you guys? What about you? What do you say about that?
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. While I think at Saucedo, our administration works really hard to help us with that and make sure that we have the supports that we need. The fact is that we do have a lot of students with special needs. We are really trying to focus on doing a lot of inclusion of students that are diverse learners, and that just takes a lot of extra support in the classroom.
Do you think too much attention has been spent on 40 kids in a classroom? That number's been thrown out and people lose their minds over it, and I'm not sure that many classrooms have 40 kids. What's your reaction to that, Dave?
Well, I mean, at Kenwood, like, we have a great administration, super supportive, but we're also meant for 1,700 kids and we have over 2,000. I've got 35 freshmen in my 4th period human geography class. The freshman class is the biggest it's ever been, beating last year's freshman class, which was the biggest it had been at that point. So classes are maxed out, and room space is maxed out, and the halls are very tight to walk through even to get to a class.
When you say, okay, everybody, let's start, 35 kids are sitting in that class, what's that like for you?
That means that 2 kids are at my desk. That means that the kids, I'm teaching and, like, I'm managing the classroom well, but I'm not giving the kids the individual instruction that they need, even with another teacher who's in that class with me.
How much this is the experience, how much is this not the experience? You say, all right, everybody sit down and be quiet. I'm going to do my lecture now, and you're going to take notes, and we're going to do it that way. I mean, why are you shaking your head? I'm not even done with the question. That doesn't happen much?
Lecturing is probably one of the, you know, most ineffective teaching methods.
Okay, so bad. So maybe that was a bad question.
But are you also talking about classroom management? So,
sure. What's it like in the classroom?
Yeah. So, I mean, we all work really hard on classroom management. Good teachers have good classroom management. There's been talk of, like, we want, you know, nationally recommended staffing levels of social workers at our school. So there's been a lot of talk about, you know, oh, they want one at every school. Well, you know, whatever the nationally recommended level is, that's what we'd like to see.
Do you have a social worker at your school?
Yeah, we're lucky. But
5 days a week?
Yeah, but part of that we got through a grant. So we've gotten some support because we've gone above and beyond what CPS has provided for us. So we're kind of in a lucky position. But if you don't, with the kind of discipline that they want us to do, that's more positive and long-lasting and involves some intrinsic work, you really need a social worker to help, so that if a kid's really struggling, and often you see that struggle as a discipline problem in your classroom, that's where you first see it, it's really helpful to have a social worker that you can refer that kid to.
You don't just grab him, throw him out in the hall and say, you're disrupting my class, get
out of here. Right. That's there's nobody to watch that kid, first of all. Like, you know, that's not what... it's not effective either. That kid's going to be out there tomorrow.
Dave, why did you laugh at that when I said that?
Well, I mean, it's about... We teach because we love kids, right? And so it's about building relationships with kids to make your classroom an effective space, right? And so if I have 25 kids that I can work and get to connect with and talk to their parents with all the time, I can do that a lot more effectively than if I have 35, right? So 35 is making me do all the extra stuff plus 10, right? And so, like, I value communicating with parents every day during my prep periods. Like, I value all those things and building positive relationships, because it's not about management. It's about building community in that classroom.
Stephanie, how important is the preparation time for teachers?
I would say it's very invaluable, just because in my experience, I teach both 7th grade pre-algebra and different sections of high school geometry. And given that I have such two drastic curriculum, I need those extra class periods to not only prep the curriculum, but in my geometry classes, I have 8th through sophomores in that class. And we're talking about a wide range of skill sets with math. So when we were talking about what instruction looks like in the classroom, my students aren't sitting there taking notes. What's most effective for them is me to create lessons with small group instruction. I differentiated that to their skills.
And is it reasonable to expect the teachers to have that time during the school day to do that, or should the teachers come already prepared to teach? I don't know the answer to that. What do you all say about that?
Well, I mean, I think we would all probably say we do come early and leave late and spend that time preparing lessons. But to piggyback on what Stephanie's saying, we're also a lot of us probably differentiating lessons so that, you know, it's not just one lesson that we're teaching. We're also making sure that our materials are appropriate for kids at a variety of skill levels. And that takes time and it takes preparation.
Beth, what time do you get to school each day?
I get to school at 7:30.
And then how long are you there till?
Depending on the day, I leave between 5 and 5:30.
Can you all just share with me your answer to that question? What about you, Stephanie?
Our school day starts at 9. I get there at 7. And depending on how much grading, not until school day ends at 4:15, I leave around 6.
How about you?
I get there about 7:45 for a 9 o'clock start. And then I also coach poetry after school, which means I'm there a lot of days till 6:30 when class ends at 4:15.
How about you, Jane?
I get there between 7:30 and 8. Our school day starts at 9, and I'm usually there till 6:30 when they kick me out of the building, and I also do an after-school drama club. So,
what about you?
8:15 in the morning, same thing, 6:30 at 9 until they kick us out from the building.
And with band, sometimes it's rehearsals on weekends and things like that,
yep.
Too.
To Saturday rehearsals programs. Sometimes, yes.
Where were you all on the idea that the student-athletes should be able to play? You know, maybe the coaches or the band directors say, I'm going to get paid anyway. I'll just show up. Even if I didn't get paid, I think a lot of the coaches and extracurricular activity faculty advisors would say, I want this for the kids. Would any of you have been interested in, you know, quote unquote, crossing the picket line for the extracurricular activities?
I mean, we're part of the union. That's something you just, I think throughout the board, throughout the whole CTU union, is that we would not cross that picket line, even if it was for any kind of activities. My band is going to have to do some extra work when we do come back from the strike to try to prepare for competitions and stuff for March. But, you know, that's, you know, we can't, you know.
Yeah, I would also want to look into that more, because what I had read last was that it was a district decision.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't up to the teachers.
It didn't get that far.
It didn't get that far. So we didn't get to say, yeah, we're, you know, this isn't crossing the line. We're still, you know, in our capacity as teachers, but also teachers on strike, and we can get these kids to these competitions. It's our understanding the district told the kids no.
And it also kind of goes into the idea of, like, it's a short-term pain. We're trying to change the way school's been done in Chicago for generations, and so this is a very intense sacrifice for these students, right, and for us to be away from these students, but, like, to fundamentally change an education system that's not looked out for its students, that's what our overall goal is.
At Saucedo, what percentage of these students are on some sort of economic assistance for breakfast and lunch? You know, that's one way they sort of characterize the socioeconomic status of the students. What is it at your school?
Yeah, so I think if you go by both free and reduced, we're at 100%. If you just take the there's another calculation, but we come out at like 97%. So
it's a fairly poor student population base that you're dealing with there.
Yeah, in order to qualify for free and reduced lunch, you have to be below, I believe it's like the 25th percentile in income.
And so how many students at your school again?
We're a little over 1,000 right now.
Yeah. What about at Kenwood? Can you answer the same sort of questions? What's it like at Kenwood?
I think at Kenwood, because we have such a mixed program where a good portion of our students are from the neighborhood, Hyde Park and Kenwood area, but we, in our academic center, they test in. Our percentages are more a little over 70% free and reduced, and this is a very rough estimate. And just in terms of student population, they come not only from that neighborhood, but all over the city. Yeah.
If you had one thing that you would hold out for, and I don't want to talk too much about contract negotiation. Mm-hmm. Lord knows we hear the two sides on the news enough. But in the classroom, is there something that you're rooting for, Carlos, that you thought, boy, if we're out for 2 weeks, I sure hope we get this? What would it be for you?
For me personally, this is more of a personal thing. Many people don't know that music is not a requirement in the CPS. It's by how large the school is. So it's either art or it's either music, one or both.
The school doesn't even have to have a music program.
That's correct.
You're not saying that it has to be a requirement for the students, but at least give them the option, require the school to provide that. And they don't even provide, that's not mandated.
So the way music and art works is if you're over, I believe, 501 or certain number of students, you get both art or music or double art or double music.
Yeah.
But for me personally, I would like to see better funding for arts education. You know, since we don't get any funding, I had to spend a lot of my own personal money on, you know, things like repairs, getting new instruments.
I'm going to ask you about that in a second, how much you all would estimate you came out of your pocket. But before we get to that, what's your wish, Beth, for the school, for this contract?
I really, really want to see some kind of accountability for class sizes being too large. At Saucedo, I think we've been very, don't want to say lucky, but yeah, lucky. I mean, our administration they really understand how important that is. And I think that my personal class is at a size that is manageable, but I've taught at other schools where that's definitely not the case.
And the mayor says, well, we'll put $20 million toward that, but
right,
they're not putting in writing the guarantee that
right,
you'll have below this number.
Right. So they've talked about different ways to, like, solve that problem. But yeah, like, unless you have some way to, like, hold them accountable for going over that, like, that's a really difficult thing.
Yeah, they've actually said that they put $35 million towards that. But there's 40,000 that are in overcrowded classrooms. And so if you divide $35 million over a five-year contract, that's $7 million a year, divided by 40,000 children, that's $175 a kid. It's, you know, yes, we're talking
about the problem, does
yeah,
it? Okay, stay right there. Jane is in our studio. Dave, Stephanie, Beth, and Carlos. I want you to, the other three of you, answer that question. What's your wish? And I wonder what your out-of-pocket expenses have been as Chicago Public School teachers, say this year in a given year. It's 2:21, and this is WGN. Five Chicago Public School teachers are in our studio. We're talking about what their classrooms and teaching experiences are like. So thank you all for being here. This will be a short segment. We'll do the news and then come back and talk to me some more, guys. But Carlos and Beth and Stephanie and Dave and Jane, we've introduced them a moment ago. Let's just pick it up where we left off. Stephanie, we're talking about if there was one thing you had on your wish list for this contract, what would you be glad you held out for?
I think overall, speaking to Beth's point about accountability and class size, I would just say accountability overall and everything that CPS and the mayor has been proposing. I think a lot of the frustrations from previous contracts has been lack of accountability for what they had promised. And everything that we're fighting for is for the betterment of the experiences of our students. And whatever we get, I just hope it sticks.
So does that mean you don't trust them when they say, don't worry, we're going to get that, we just can't put that in writing?
I would say so, just from my experience.
What about you, Dave?
I absolutely don't trust. I've been 13 years in the system, and I've been lied to for 13 years.
What's the thing you want to have in this contract?
My partner and I are both CPS teachers. We have two kids that attend CPS elementary school, pre-K and second grade. So pre-K, we just had to strike to get preschoolers to be able to take naps in school. We had to strike to get it to be a 10-to-1 ratio of adults to kids, even though that's state law. Like, we had to strike to get that. And I teach my kids, right, are in the system. And so it's very personal to me. Like, obviously I love my students, but I'm going to pick my kids, right, over. And so, like, to have both, like, I'm fighting for both my students who I've been fighting for 13 years and then also my own children.
So what's the item? What's the line item?
I want everything that elementary school teachers want. I want that for them. I want them to have that extra time they need to plan to look out for, like, all the elementary school students.
Jane, what's your short answer to that?
What I want?
Yeah.
I want maybe accountability for a class size would fix a lot of what I want, but it's bigger than that because I want my prep time, and I would also like that we hold them accountable for the support staff they say they're going to get us for bilingual, you know, English language learners, which is a huge issue at the Little Village School, and then also the diverse learners, the special ed.
I want to know what your interaction with the parents and the families are like. I want to know what comes out of your pocketbook. We said we'll break for the news here, but then continue to talk to me. Do y'all have a few more minutes? You are not on the line today, right? Maybe you'll go back out on the...
We actually left the line. We had a protest at the 78, so...
I appreciate you coming here. Okay, we're talking with some Chicago public school teachers. I appreciate the time, and I might even go so far as to say courage, of Jane Haddad, who is here, as well as Dave Stieber, Stephanie Bernardo, Beth Fiorito, correct, Beth? And also Carlos Ayento. They teach in the Chicago Public School a range of classes from band to math, history, English, and we're just talking about what their experience is like. Three of our guests teach at Saucedo, right, which is in Little Village, and Dave and Stephanie are over at Kenwood Academy. Carlos, how much would you say comes out of your pocket? You're on the music side.
Yes.
So I don't know, maybe it's less, maybe it's more. How much are you all personally spending as teachers at CPS?
So through all the receipts and all through the stuff that I do for tax records, it comes to about an average of $10,000.
$10,000 what?
$10,000 out of my own pocket.
A year.
A year.
Are you serious?
I'm very serious.
Do you get redeemed for any of that?
$250.
Okay, so $9,500, $9,750, right? Math teacher, comes out of your pocket.
Yes.
$9,000? And do you get to write that off on your taxes?
Just $250, according to the last previous legislation.
What do you spend that money on?
Supplies, repairs.
To instruments.
Some of the instruments I own for the
students
to use.
Registration
fees for competitions, buses.
Don't the parents or the kids pay that?
And we also fundraise. So that's on top of the fundraising money that we do make, you know.
How typical are you, Carlos, in that? Do other band directors?
I would say in the music world, it is not uncommon for a lot of music educators to put in their personal money to supply their programs because they're not underfunded.
Carlos, you don't have to tell me how much you earn, but I'm going to guess it's $70,000 a year, something like that?
Around that, yes.
Okay, so then $10,000 comes off the top just for you to do the job for the kids.
That's correct.
What about you, Beth?
I would say the first year I taught, I spent around $2,000, but I've been working to bring that down every year. Less the money as a professional, I'd feel like I should be given what I need to do my job. So I've really been trying to cut that back. Last year, I spent probably about $500, $250 of which was reimbursed.
Is it the position of all of you that I shouldn't have to spend anything? I mean, I'm educating.
That's
this is a public
position.
School.
Yeah, right. I know other people may feel differently if they're like feeling altruistically called to do that. But I feel like as a professional that I should have what I need to do my job.
Do any of you want to volunteer on this? What do you say?
I would say there's the reality of the world and professionally, and there's also the teacher reality we have to face. As educators, we know what our students need, and if even though I can't get access to those resources, I know the benefits they can have to my students, so I'm going to work towards it. I would echo Beth's sentiment. First couple years, I spent a couple $1,000s each year, but being creative, a lot of us go through Donors Choose or other avenues to try to fundraise and get grants, but
thank
we shouldn't have
to. Thank goodness for those things, yeah. Mm-hmm. Either of you want to chime in on this?
Yeah, I mean,
pardon me, go ahead.
That's okay. Based off what Stephanie was saying, too, like, I coach poetry, right? And so, like, coaching poetry, if you're not familiar, like, Chicago is the world's largest youth poetry slam, louder than a bomb. And so, like, I spend over 100 hours of my own time for free doing poetry, right? And so with 100 hours with students after school, that's a lot of food. That's a lot of CTA rides. That's a lot of stuff that I'm paying for in my own pocket, right? So I'm talking like at least $1,000 a year just off my own paycheck on top of that.
Yeah.
And Donors Choose, right, is great, but also like our school should be able to fund laptops and computers and all that stuff too.
Jane, jump in here. You can answer that, but also... let's not dwell on this too much, but I hear that with this contract, you guys are going to make $94,000 to $100,000 a year at the end of the contract, and that you're not that far from it right now. What's the reality of that?
So at our school, there's one teacher who makes more than $100,000, and I think they've been in CPS for 28 years.
How many teachers at your school?
There's about 100.
So 100 teachers, yeah, and one of them is six figures.
And it's all public knowledge. I mean, if you looked and you compiled what our average was, I mean, I think it would probably come out to 65 because the huge chunk of teachers are making 62 or less, like between 56 and 62.
Mm-hmm.
And that number, Dave can speak to this more because a math teacher at Kenwood, you know, crunched those numbers. But that's that 100K, that's what the average teacher is going to make, is predicated upon them staying in the system and being in the system longer than 11 years, which most teachers don't.
If you want to see what she's talking about, the CTU union has a whiteboard. Math teacher stands up there and says, okay, here's... And then, like a good math teacher, he in very understandable terms explains and displays how the numbers get there and how realistic or unrealistic it is. But what do you all make of the fact that people get hung up on this? $100,000. I'd like $100,000 for 9 months and a long Christmas break.
We were talking about this earlier. Teaching is a craft. There's other jobs that are a craft. I used to be an auditor. I was a CPA. And every single year, we got more money because they knew that every single year you were getting that much more experience. And that wasn't capped out after 14 years like it is in CPS. You know, teachers that have 14 years in the system haven't had a raise, even a cost of living raise, in 8 years. So
wait a minute. CPS teachers with the contract they've had have not been getting raises?
Right. Since 2012, teachers that have 14 or more years in CPS have not had a raise, not even a cost of living adjustment.
Why, do you cap out at a certain point? Is that what it is?
They capped out the 2012 contract at step 14, year 14. And so whatever you had at that time, that's it. Even if you got a master's or whatever. If you had a master's at step 14.
Okay, I didn't realize that. Yeah. But I mean, Beth, you were talking about this off the air, and you can all chime in on this. You understand the frustration that some people in the community have when they hear $100,000? I mean, what's your reaction to that generally? I thought your point was that the union, well, it's what you guys were talking about off the air. I'm sure you don't mind my repeating it. Needs to present its case better. If this was a marketing class, I would say, whatever the issues are, the union is not representing the teacher's position as well as it should.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I was saying was, you know, we're teachers, but we're doing a terrible job of teaching the public about what our schools need and what the problems are in our schools.
Because we just keep hearing $100,000, hearing $100,000. And we see your union representatives stridently making your case on TV, but I think people watch that and they go, wait a minute, $100,000. They keep hearing $100,000, Dave. They keep hearing $100,000.
Yeah, I mean, the city's doing a great job of saying, you know, the same thing when it gets up in front of the press. You know, we have to have some good sound bites where, you know, we can counter that each and every
time.
Okay,
so the 100 teachers at your school, only one person is
only
making
one.
Any idea,
that's all
like
public knowledge. You can look that up.
And plenty of kids have looked up their teachers, trust me, if it's a public school. What's it like at Kenwood?
So, I mean, the thing, too, is like, so I'm in my 13th year teaching, right? And I'm 39 years old. Like, I am considered old now in CPS because most teachers, there's a big exodus at year 7. Teachers leave the CPS to go to the suburbs because you can get paid more, a lot more, and you have more resources, right? And so then if you make it past year 7, then there's another big exodus around year like 11, right? And so like
You cap out at 10.
Because you cap out at 14, right? And so there's this cap, right? And so you don't value experience. And also with student-based budgeting, schools get paid now, like they get a certain amount of money. And if you have experienced teachers, they cost more. I'm nationally board certified with my master's. I cost more than a new teacher, right? But even though I have more experience and expertise, schools don't care because I still cost more. And their bottom line is this.
I would think they would want more of you.
That's if in a perfect world, that would make sense.
You're a white male with a master's degree. I want more men. I want more men of color. I want master's degrees. I mean, I would think they would value that, right?
That's too expensive at that point, though.
Carlos, what did you want to say?
I want to say, you know, a lot of people don't realize that for a CPS teacher to retire fully without any kind of penalties, they have to have roughly 34 years of teaching and be at least, I want to say, 56. So if our cap is at 16, so virtually more than half of their career, they're making the same amount of money from year 16 all the way till 34. I'm at year 18. So I'm
seriously?
Already I'm at year 18. 60,
so year 18, you don't get a raise in year 19 and year 20
nope.
and so forth? Not on the contract
not,
you're
not
on right
contract.
Now. This so, new contract would give you a raise if you all assigned the one?
Very minimal.
Really? I
very
thought well, you're not going to be one
I think it comes
of those?
Out to about $500 a person.
I'm sorry. I thought I heard it was 16% over 5 years. That wouldn't apply to you in your case?
Just as a small increment, but not like where other teachers still making annually. So the first 14 steps, you know, teachers make a percentage increase, you know, as a trade. As they're improving, they're getting more money. But after a certain year, which is year 14, they stop. So you're making the same amount of money. The only raise you do get is either through contract negotiations or through, you know, these raises, which is very minimal.
You're the music teacher who said
that's
you
correct.
Spent $10,000 this year. This year?
On your every seat? Year.
Every year. And some people just don't believe that. The techs are not sure that that's the truth.
Yeah, I have my tax records to prove it. You know, so it's. I know a lot of people think, some people say, well, you do it by choice. Well, I have to do it. If I don't do it, I don't have a program. I can't do what I need to do as an effective music teacher and band director to compete against other schools that do have those funds to... You know,
how much of this is about the students, you guys? What is your interaction with the students like? Are there kids in the Chicago Public Schools in your classrooms who are bringing so much crap to school every day with their family and the city and the crime that it's really hard to teach them? Or are they surprisingly like the kids I might find in the suburbs and they're here to learn and they like engaging and they're quote unquote good students? What's walking in your door, Stephanie, every day?
I would say a great percentage of my students come with so much trauma from home, given that we're in the Kenwood Hyde Park area and from surrounding areas. This year alone, I have a set of twins in one class where their family lost everything from a fire, and just trying to catch up with online homework and being transitional from different homes of family members, there's no stability, and their story isn't unique either. Right. So whether it's instability at home or just with who they're with when they go after school, a lot of obstacles stand in their way from being able to learn.
How do you answer that, Beth? What's walking in the door for you each morning?
Well, as you said that, my reaction, you're like, is it either like the suburbs or is it kids with trauma? My answer is yes. they're great kids. The kids that I teach are great kids. And I'm sure there are kids with trauma going to suburban schools, too. But I do think in the city there are more kids experiencing homelessness or, you know, in temporary living situations where they're moving around or they're doubled up with family members or bringing in other kinds of traumatic experiences.
What about the rest of you? Is there a student? Is there a scenario you came home and you told your partner or spouse or whoever you come home to, boy, I had to put up with this today? And put up with, I'm not criticizing a kid or a sad family. I'm just wondering, wow, this is your reality. Is there something that comes to mind when
I mean, you know, my daughter went to CPS school. She just graduated in June. And I mean, her first week of high school, she came home one day crying. And I said, what's happening? And she's like, I can't tell you. And I said, well, if you could just tell me, you know, next week or, you know, Monday or whatever, because she said she would tell me the next week and that it had something to do that happened at school. And she had made a new friend that week who she discovered had been cutting herself. And the reason why she had been cutting herself was because of something that was happening at home with her mother's boyfriend. And she was afraid it was going to happen to her younger sister. And she didn't know who to talk to. And I mean, these are, you know, I know this can happen anywhere in any suburb, city, town, or whatever. But there was, on top of all of that, like an immigration threat, like the person that was perpetrating the crime on them would be threatening to turn them into immigration. And I just think in the city, we have kids, more kids like that in our system that are extremely vulnerable. And then if you add any kind of learning issue on top of that, an English language learning issue or diverse, you know, special education, we have a large vulnerable population.
Answer that question, Dave, and then answer this question. Tell me something you're especially proud of that you really think is fantastic about your school or your students.
Okay. So the reason we're all here, the reason we've been on strike for 10 days is because we absolutely love our students and we're willing to do whatever it takes for our students. I'd rather be teaching any day of the week. I've taught in other schools besides Kenwood that have a lot of challenges. I've dealt with student death. I've dealt with students being killed by the police. And we need social workers and counselors to help our students deal with that, but also to help us deal with that. I'm still not able to fully talk about those things. I don't want to talk about those things, but like it impacts all of our students every single day and us. The things I'm most proud of, right, is like, I have a student who I just saw on the strike line, and she's now a SICA, right? She works at a school helping out in schools, and she got her master's at UIC. And like I was literally striking.
A SICA is a special education assistant.
Thank you. She works one-on-one with a student with special needs. And I taught her, and she graduated in 2012. I taught her. She went to get her master's at UIC with me, or the same program as me. I'm older. And then I saw her on the strike line, and like I'm literally striking to get her so she can get a basic living wage, right? And then I see her fighting for her own students, and it's like, that's literally what we do it for, like just to see our kids grow and mature and just be successful.
It's Dave Stieber from Kenwood Academy. Stephanie Bernardo is sitting next to him. Beth Fiorito is in our studio. Carlos Ciento and Jane Haddad. We'll just have a couple of minutes when we come back. It's 2:51, and this is WGN. It's rare that we do this, take a whole hour and put a bunch of people in the studio. I thought it was a good idea, and I'm glad that we've had the time to do this. Thank you, Jane Haddad, from Saucedo, which is one of the schools in the Chicago Public School System in Little Village, and then also from Kenwood Academy. Dave Stieber's here, Stephanie Bernardo, Beth Fiorito, and Carlos Ayento are also from Saucedo. If we run out of time, thank you all for coming into our studio.
Thanks for having
me. Is there something else? We just got a couple minutes, guys, that you want to say? Is there something else that maybe I haven't asked that, I mean, my pitch to you all was, tell me what your experience is like, what I don't know when I watch TV. What do you want to say, Carlos?
I think a lot of people just don't know the amount of hours that we put in. There's a, you know, when people say, oh, they don't need prep time, we put a lot of our own personal time without getting any sort of compensation.
Okay, I asked you that question, and I don't mean to cut your answer off, but that's a point that I think all of you might say, and I know what my listeners are thinking. We put in a lot of prep time, too. The average person works 48, 50 weeks a year, and they're there from 8 to 6, and they take their work home on weekends. So Carlos, respond to that, if you will. How is your experience different than everybody else's, or is it different than everybody else's?
I think since we're working with actual students, it's not like you're taking other things. You're looking out for the students' well-being day after day after day and trying to prepare for what's going to make them successful in the future. I've had many of my own personal students become either music teachers themselves over the years or professional jazz musicians, and you know that wouldn't have been possible if I hadn't planned in any kind of proper lessons for them since they've been from kindergarten until they graduated from 8th grade.
So it's more than just a job, it's lives.
It's a career, it's a passion. You know, you have to love to do this job.
Beth, what's your response to all of this, too? Is there something you want our audience to know before we all wrap it up here?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think we're all teachers because we love what we do, and we love our students. And I think you know, you've been talking a lot about, like, you know, people in your audience are probably thinking, like, oh, man, those teachers, like, what are they complaining about? They got it so great. So, yeah, like, there are perks to our job. Like, you mentioned a lot of vacation time, and that's certainly something we signed up for. But, you know, I don't see anyone complaining that their doctor makes too much money, right? And that's, like, teaching is a similarly complex job. Maybe, you know, we didn't go to school as long as a doctor did. But, like, in terms of, like, what our work is, I think that people have a misunderstanding that the work is less complicated, or that, like, they know what it is because they've been a student and they've, like, seen it and they think that they understand what that work is. But there's a lot of, like, you know, diagnosing what's going on with students and assessing them and figuring out what's coming next. And it's I think that It's complicated work, and we are professionals, and I think that we deserve to be compensated for that.
Yeah. Do you think that the contract offer is at least fair comp? Nobody has here said that the money is not fair compensation for the work. You all have been talking about prep time and assistance in the classroom.
I personally feel like my compensation is workable for me. I think that we've spent a lot of time in this contract negotiation talking about raising the bottom for the people who are making the lowest wages, and I think that's fair.
Before we run out of time, what's Team Lakewood say over here?
I say overall at Kenwood, and it's the similar sentiment, we're really just fighting for quality education for each of our students since it's their right. And a lot of what we're fighting for, aside from compensation, are just basic things that all schools within most states and within suburban areas, they get. And it's legally required. It's just, as what was mentioned earlier, we have to strike in order to get those laws.
Got it. And how about you, Dave?
I would say I would ask the mayor to look at her kids' private school, and I would ask people listening to look at their suburban schools and say, look at what those schools have. Our schools don't have anything like that. And so if you see what your school has and be like, wow, I wish our school had more in the suburbs, well, we wish our school had five times more than that, right? We wish our kids had 15 kids in a class like private schools do. They don't. They have 35.
I got 30 seconds left.
I would go back to, we're asking for basic things. We really are. If you compare us to other school districts, we're asking for basic things and having to strike to get those. And also, I don't think it's fair for the city to put on the backs of its teachers, police, fire, water, sewer, whoever doesn't have a fair contract, park district, service employee unions, to put 25 years of their financial mismanagement on our backs. We deserve a fair contract.
You can email me what you think about this segment, johnwilliams@wgnradio.com. We didn't take calls. I've only read a few texts here, but we're sure getting a large reaction. So I'm John Williams at wgnradio.com.